The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey, this is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 241 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. And I am super excited to bring you my interview with Chris Prieto from Prime Barbecue in Knightdale, North Carolina. This one is about a year or two in the making. We were supposed to talk about a year ago, but I'm glad we talked now because he has a lot of insight into opening a restaurant, especially opening a restaurant during a pandemic. This is a restaurant that for 2 years he's wanted to build and he's had in his mind, and it was supposed to open earlier this year. It ended opening on Cinco de Mayo, and it was different than how he had imagined because he had all these things in line, and you could tell, like, during the interview you learn a lot about the processes and, like, how he goes about conceptualizing how something should work, and he pre-plans like crazy, and he's very methodical. He's also, his Instagram handle's Barbecue Nerd. He's very nerdy about things and very detailed, which is awesome, and it helped him out a lot. But he was not planning on doing to-go at the very beginning, just take out completely. And they had to evolve and pivot and, like everyone else, try to figure out how things are. So this actually is kind of like, it harkens back to when the pandemic first started. So if you have suppressed those memories, or if you just haven't thought about it a lot, it all comes washing back through this interview. If you're watching the YouTube version, at the very end of this, I'm going to have a walkthrough of the entire restaurant. He walks us through a really beautiful property, enormous space, 8,000 square feet. There's an outdoor space. There's a really cool kid space that I'll let you see if you're watching the video. I can't thank him enough for taking the time. It's a unique restaurant. You have to visit. They're at 50% capacity right now. There's a lot of cool things that they offer. I don't want to spoil it because the way he describes it, it's so wonderful. This has been such an important thing to him. And now that it's open and he's sharing it with the world, it's a great thing. So I'm sure I'll talk to him again and you'll learn more about his backstory as well as a myriad of other things that we could talk about. The Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast and YouTube show is brought to you by Centex Smokers out of Luling, Texas. The best way to get a hold of them is on Instagram. It's at @CENTEX_smokers, SMOKERS. Out of Luling, Texas, as I said, Michael Johnson, he's been welding since he was 5 or 6 years old. He's a master welder. He's done incredible work. If you go to Instagram, you can see his amazing stuff. He's done a killer pit for Mo Kaysen, done stuff for Ronnie Killen, I think twice for Ronnie Killen, doing a lot of stuff. His lead time right now is 4 to 5 months. He can do just about anything. He's going to add some live fire stuff too. But check him out at Centex Smokers. That's at CENTEX_smokers. Shoot him a DM. Get a quote. I think you'll be very surprised. The show is also brought to you by Treaty Oak Distilling. They're available at treatyoakdistilling.com or at their physical location in Dripping Springs. 26 acres, barbecue restaurant on site. Draw their bourbon, gin, everything. They even have wine, they even have beer that they make, but that's only available on property. Again, it's treatyoakdistilling.com. Great people, great product. Check them out. And I have a website at kevinsbbqjoints.com. Links to all the podcasts, all the YouTube stuff, as well as specific projects I'm working on related to barbecue joints. So check out, there's a lot of cool information there. I think you'll enjoy it. A lot of visual stuff, a lot of photographs. I also have a new website that's launching very soon. It's really, really massive, so it's taking me a little bit longer to do, but keep checking back for that. I'm on all social media at Kevin's BBQ Joints. If you listen to just the podcast, I have a YouTube show at youtube.com/Kevin's BBQ Joints. But the end, stay safe, stay sane. Support your local businesses, support your local barbecue joint. Have a great week.
Wow, this is really, I am astounded. And I'd seen kind of the build out, and you were really good at showing the build out on Instagram and on social media.
Yeah.
And it looked really cool, and it looked impressive, but I am excited to show people this because that was just killer. I am so happy for you. So how does it feel right now?
It feels great. Huh? I feel really relaxed.
You seem at ease.
Well, it's my whole life. I built this anticipation to this point, and I've slowly and patiently prepared myself, prepared my team, just prepared my family, just everything. Now we're doing it. So I'm happy. I'm calm. I come in every day and do what I love. Even the hard days, you don't consider them that hard, you know? Yeah, it's like I really love being a dad. And not, you know, when you have 5 children, under nine, not every day is going to go exactly how your mind sees. I'm going to walk through the door. The kids are going to give me a hug. We're all going to sit down together and have dinner. And they're all going to tell me about their day and give me a kiss on the cheek and go right to bed. No, I've never had a day.
No.
But I love it so much. Like, deep down in my heart, I would never change a thing about it. And I don't see it as being a burden to be a father or a burden to patiently wait till they stop freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
Same with the restaurant. Even the people who just are just having a bad day, I'm like, I'm doing what I love every day. So you could say whatever you want. You could do whatever you want. I'm still going to make it a great day.
You're so grounded, so
it's
right now.
Easy to just love on them well that way.
No, that's important. I think that maybe by the end of this interview, people will be able to pull a little bit of that energy from you, because this is, especially during these times, I think that's important. Sure. To have that sort of outlook. And I try my best every day to be as positive and to look for all the best things in life. It's not easy, but there's a lot worse situations any of us could be in. When did you officially open the restaurant?
I opened Cinco de Mayo.
Was it Cinco de Mayo?
Yeah, it was on Cinco de Mayo. And I did not plan that at all. I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to sit back and wait till they say I can open. And it happened to be on that day. I could have waited two more weeks. But I was like, nah, let's do that. It's just Cinco de Mayo. So I remember opening it, crushing me, because it was like so much pressure. And then just eating tacos afterwards and just being like, that was pretty fun. Let's do it again tomorrow.
That was this year. So it was, what was the COVID situation? Was that a concern opening up?
It was like the most perfect situation to open a restaurant. So coming out of December, I had a great Christmas. Starting January, everything's on time. I've hit almost 2 years on the build. So 2 years I've been staring at this thing, working on this thing. And during those 2 years, I've spent every hour just going through every process, every standard, every what's the customer going to see, risk analysis, just fun, obsessive stuff that really worked with my type A personality. We had a huge opportunity. I had a great opportunity to meet this gentleman who put me in contact. So I ended up spending all of February going through Florida, the spring training camps for the MLB baseball teams.
That's really cool.
And I was cooking barbecue for each individual organization.
What?
And I was also doing like a small sermon. So it's a Christian-based organization.
Wow.
So basically I went out and I preached at a different baseball building. I got to cook a whole lot of barbecue. Rub from Swamp Boys Barbecue let me as cooker. Okay. So I flew into Tampa, grabbed Rub's cooker. We hung out. And his house is like every barbecuer's dream. His side tables in his living room's Weber kettle cookers from like the 70s.
That's so cool.
I could not leave his house. He was like, okay, Chris, you got to go. So so much cool barbecue stuff there. And then we went around Florida. We would go there, rent an Airbnb, literally start trimming, cooking in some random house, get there at noon, execute the event from 6 to like 9:10, pack everything up, scrape the cooker, then drive 4 more hours across Florida, get there about 2 in the morning, trim, season, get about 3 hours of sleep, and do it all over again. We did it over and over and over. So we were loving life. We were having great conversations. My calendar was getting packed. That whole February, we were going to film a TV show, which I can't disclose, but it was a pretty big one, the biggest one of my career. So when I got back from Florida, I literally would fly to LA, do the TV show. I would fly back, and I'm going to have my grand opening in my restaurant.
That's a lot.
That's exactly how it was going to go. We had all my friends over my entire career traveling the country that were flying out, you know, bringing their Instagram followers and, you know, going to help promote this thing. And it was going to be awesome. We worked with the town for 6 or 8 months on the amphitheater across to book these huge 90s rock bands, everything free for the kids. We're having Wounded Warrior come out. We're going to raise money for them. Half of our proceeds, we're going to go to them. We're going to have all these great, like, wounded veteran speakers. We're going to do a flag raising. It was going to be epic. Like, Axl Rose to the top of his lungs on a piano epic. It was just going to be, this is beautiful. And everything was planned out. Our catering was booked.
This is for March?
We're going to open in April.
Okay.
So I was going to be 2 weeks in LA. And then it was like April 18th, I want to say, was the grand opening day. 2 weeks in LA, get back. I had like 4 or 5 days to say hello to the staff because I already pre-trained. I created the training platform so my general manager could train while I was doing filming. And then I was just going to open the restaurant. It was going to be like, and then everyone, all my family from Puerto Rico was flying in. So it was like 2,000 Puerto Ricans coming here to just go nuts. I had my executive coordinator like organizing who's staying where, how many people are coming here, the VIPs. It was going to be so much fun. And then the last week of February doing the MLB thing, the agent of that personality I was going to be filming with called and said, he's getting a little spooked because there's something happening in China. And I remember I was traveling, you know, like literally driving going, what's happening in China?
Exactly.
So I had Justin and Albert, the guys that I always travel with me. I was like, Google disease in China. Like we were that, not knowing what's going on. So they were like, yeah, it's called coronavirus. And I was like, okay,
yeah.
Sure. So I got back. That was 2 days before I came back. I came back and then the show canceled. I was like, wow, that was big because to prepare for that show took 5-6 months.
I can imagine.
Just a preparation, productions, just interviewing for it. I was like, okay, that's cool. We got our grand opening. Then we met with the town the day after I got back. Town said, we're closing everything. It's canceled. Your festival's canceled. I was like, okay. Then literally within that 24-hour period, every single celebrity, anyone who was coming here, canceled. All my family canceled their flights. My parents canceled. Grandparents aren't coming. Festival's canceled. And I was like, wow. Okay. And then I got back to the building and the builders were like, everything's going to be delayed because the builders can't come. So I was like, oh, wow. So when do you think we're going to open? And they were like, I don't know. We'll try our hardest. So I used to sit in the front of the building and there's this beautiful park in front of me and just watch these thousands of people in this park being built up. And I thought, man, this is going to bring people together. It's going to draw them in. And that's what I wanted. I wanted to interact and, you know, lift the community, be the rising tide. And within a week, it's like I was trying to finish a restaurant and then no one was out here and you had to wear a mask and it was somber. And then everything started to kind of implode and collapse. And it was my entire life's work was gone, it felt like, at one moment. I mean, just to be transparent with, like, my human side, it was just terrible, gut-wrenching. And luckily, I have a extremely supportive wife and friends and family and mentors that were like, just let's go. Let's do it. They said, you can open maybe early May. And I was like, okay. But you can't have a grand opening because we're in phase one. You can't have people inside of your restaurant. You can't have people come up to your restaurant. You only can have a certain amount of cars behind your restaurant. So I had to open a restaurant, which I've never, in my business plan, I had like a phase where I was going to start doing to-go orders, but not singular, you know, like I want a barbecue sandwich to-go order. So we had to pivot in our business plan because we were all about the experience. When people came in, it was like, we wanted to baptize them in this true experience of the craft of barbecue. We wanted to slowly cut in front of them what I saw when I was a child that mesmerized me and provide the right amount of music, the right amount of lighting, the right amount of just customer service. And we didn't get any of that. All we had was the food wrapped up in a bag. So just like in competition, which is great, you don't know whose box that is. Right? Like I've judged and competed so much in my life. It's so awesome to know that you don't see the flash, the personality, anything. It's like you have to show in each and every bite what you're about. your passion, your drive, your time you put into it, everything that you care about, every little detail had to be in every single bite. And I knew that. That's why I competed for 14 years. And, you know, at one point I thought, what's the point of having all these trophies other than it's a bragging? But it was for that purpose. And I was like, look, we're going to focus all of our attention on food quality and that interaction with the customer. Because now we have a customer who is having a bad day, who has kids at home, who can't go to work, who lost their job. It was just like so much at once. And we had to be that shining light for them.
Mm-hmm. That sliver.
Because barbecue brings people together and brings that joy. And we had that opportunity to do that. So it was just like I felt it, and it was a lot of reflection and prayer during this gap of time. You know, I'm a Christian, so I really depend on those things. Yeah, I just felt like God was building the muscle back up. I felt that maybe I was too busy because everything delayed. I mean, this was like 2 years ago we broke ground, and it was like a week delay here, a month delay here, a week delay here, all to open in phase one of COVID. It was just like, it's crazy. I could have been open 3 months before or, you know, a year before even, but I had to do it during this time. So I think it was beautiful because it ripped everything that I depended on away.
Right? It made you see who you really were.
Celebrity friends I built up over time, all their Instagram followers, all this, you know, the show, and I call it the peacocking of everything. It was supposed to be awesome. And there was none of that. I literally had to open up in the cold deadness of COVID phase one.
Yeah.
And we had to do that joyfully. You know, like we get to do what we dreamt about doing our whole lives. And it's maybe not be in the right situation, but we're going to do it. And we're going to be just happy and loving and joyful about it. Because, you know, I'm filled with joy no matter what, whether it's a good day or a bad day.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I've been provided amazing grace. So it was great to go out to each and every customer that day, you know, masked up 6 feet away saying, hey,
thank you.
I appreciate your business. Hey, I appreciate your business. Writing, at the first phase, I would write thank you notes and put it in each bag. Like I had to push myself to find out how do I make this experience in a bag? Mm-hmm. You know, you have to think that way. And even like the to-go containers were scarce.
I've
heard
about that.
The butcher paper was scarce. Cutlery was scarce. So you would think it would be easy, but every little facet of creating a to-go bag was terribly difficult.
Because everyone pivoted at the exact same time.
Exact same time, right? Yeah. So it's not only did I have to be calm and creative, but it helped me grow as a leader because I'm motivating. We have principles and values on our wall in our kitchen that we speak to each and every day.
Okay.
I read this very important book called Principles. That's what it's called. And it taught me a lot about what are your principles? Like, do you know what defines you your business?
That's a great question.
And it helped me flush out before I started, what are the five key things that are going to make Prime Barbecue great? What are the five key things that are going to make our employees great, our customers great? And we had to flesh those out, and I collectively worked on that for a long period of time, and I put those up, and I just read those each and every day as much as I could to myself, because those are the things that I believe in, and I will not falter to. So
wow.
It was a crazy time, but we pivoted well, and...
Did people come out?
Oh, yeah. Well, they didn't at first, right? It was very difficult. Like meeting a customer with a mask, and then it was like, were you wearing enough gloves? And
yeah,
then they would write an email. No, he touched the handle with the glove, even though we call them service attendants. When they come in through the door, they change their gloves, and there's a trash can and a new box. So I was doing my job, but they didn't see that part.
Of course, yeah. And
so they thought like I was spraying COVID on my gloves and like rubbing it all over their food. It was fine, but you have to, you know, there was a lot of just like, I have five kids. I cook barbecue. My patience level is like samurai, right?
Yeah, no, makes sense.
I'm not kidding. I had twins, then I had three kids, then I cook barbecue all day long. So it's just like, be patient.
Yeah, you have no choice. You had to become that person. Yes.
Yeah. But the thing is, the people tasted really great barbecue for the first time. I knew when I was going to, like, I'm ready. I wasn't learning things before I got started. I've spent my entire life learning. I knew exactly how I wanted to execute, and everything was going exactly to plan. So from a profile standpoint, it was perfect. Meaning, like, I was extremely happy. It brought me joy. It brought my general manager joy. It brought all the, I call them my collective. They came and ate over and over again. They were like, this is flawless barbecue. And that's what we're trying to create. We watch the fires 24 hours a day, even though we have JRs. And yeah, you can, like, leave it for, like, 5 hours or 6 hours. We just watch them. And we're really big on our coal bed, really big on moisture and wood. Every variable I've already obsessed over at a period of time in my life. So it's just like, there's every element in here has a purpose. And then, you know, it's been thought at over, experimented against over and over and over again. It's just the hardest part is actually transitioning that mindset to someone new who's mm-hmm. never done barbecue.
Oh, yeah.
Because I will never hire a barbecuer to work for me. Doesn't make sense to me. Yeah. I use guys that have no idea. I mean, they consider hamburger a barbecue. You know, well, that's grilling. I mean, the simple things. You know, spaghetti's not a dish. It's a noodle. That's what I explained. That's what you're thinking. But it's awesome, you know, getting to see, driving into them the why. We're doing this so passionately. If you can answer the question why in someone's heart, man.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
it's an epiphany.
It's that power of passion can literally become more powerful than a barbecuer's already obsessed with it. It's like just learning and inspiring something new in their hearts. So we found two great people that we've been training. A night guy who does our trimming, seasoning, and I come in almost every single night. I live literally a block down the road. I can walk to work.
That is fabulous.
My kid's school is in the same neighborhood. So I just walk them to school, walk to work. I'll pop in every night and either make sure to go over trimming styles with them. We cook sausage together. Like we grind everything in house. We cure everything in house. We link, we smoke, we bloom it. Then we reconstitute it every day. We cook whole hog together. Hopefully this week is the last week I have to cook whole hog with him just to get it started. Because Justin, who's here, he's my general manager. He's a wounded veteran that was in one of my classes, a Wounded Warrior Project,
for
5 years ago. He's our head kind of general manager, fire maker. But he comes in at 4 o'clock every morning.
Okay.
And just hand feels out everything, gets it wrapped to where I want it. And then I walk in later in the morning and my team pretty much operates everything to my specs. I go around, I'll try a little of this, try a little of that. I'll feel out the briskets. I'll look at the color of the sausage. And then it allows me to be an operator and an owner. So when we start the shift, I don't cut a single piece of meat. I've trained that. My job is to build relationships and connections with people at the tables. Because every barbecue restaurant I've went to, I'm always searching out the owner, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, for instance, I went to Franklin, and what am I there for? I'm there to see Aaron Franklin.
Of course. You know?
It's like, I'm looking in the back. Do you see him? Oh, I don't know, man. Where's he at? Maybe the pit area. And, like, literally, we were circling, like, obsessive freshman cheerleaders, and he was the senior quarterback. No joke. It was a touch creepy. But the second time I went in with a few barbecue guys. Arnie Tex, we did an interview out there. It's on YouTube. Snow's Barbecue's one of their pit masters. And,
was Clay there? Or was it Clay?
Clay. Yeah. Clay was with us. Robert Sierra was with us. A couple other guys. Anyway, they flowed in and out. Brom ended up coming out, who was Franklin's old pit master. We ate together, and then Aaron's floating around, right? And there's a different energy and vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people got excited, right? So I'm not saying that I'm Aaron Franklin excitable, because he's like Elvis going into the room.
Yes.
I'm like an indie band that's got noticed, you know? So, well, when I'm there, I want to tell them, because they're never going to learn the passion of the food and the business and the core of why unless I tell them. Oh, but right? That drives so much more purpose to the restaurant itself than just being in a restaurant that, oh, I hear a pitmaster owns this. You know, they don't see him ever, you know. So I'm here every day. I talk to every single customer. I privately give them a pit tour that they wait in line on Saturday for me. And that's all I do all day long.
Cool.
99% of my day is filled with teaching people the passion of why we as cooks or as fire makers are so obsessed with this craft, and teach them, you know, a little bit about the background of my recipes, a little bit of background about myself, and hopefully it engages us to have just a deeper, richer conversation about life in general. Because it's always been my bridge. Barbecue's never been who I am. It's the bridge of the purpose of it, and it's really just to build people up, get to engage and love on them well, and that's why I do, you know, work with wounded veterans. I do as much charity and philanthropy as possible, but barbecue is not who I am at all. It's just a part of the tool.
It's like it's a vehicle. It's an instrument.
Yeah, yeah.
And I kind of wanted to get your history, but I like this so much better. Maybe we could do a part two that's like your background, because what's happening now is so important. Sure. What days are you open? And so at the beginning, you guys were like everyone else, we were panicked. We didn't know what was going on. We were all tripled, whatever. But now as things
the first week, like I heard stories. I mean, you know what frightened me a lot? I don't know why, but Sam Jones's book, when it came out, he has that whole chapter on when he opened the restaurant. It's a frightening chapter, you know?
That's
it's like, wow. I felt the anxiety and stress of that chapter. But, you know, obviously Sam Jones's restaurant was bigger and had more anticipation and had a lot more clientele coming in. And he had all the celebrity chefs come in. You know, he had that right opening.
Yeah.
So I had nobody. All my friends that were going to come in and help that day or that week or that first month, I was going to have, you know, Will Buckman from Corkscrew was going to come. Ronnie Killen from Killen's Barbecue was going to be here. Those are two of my awesome mentors, just awesome people.
Great guys.
And I've cooked with for a long time. And they were like, yeah, whatever you need. I mean, Will, you know, he was awesome.
Will's like one of the coolest humans on the.
None of that. I got none of that. So I'm all like, okay, it's going to be great. I'm going to have, you know, these big time operators with me. They're going to tell me,
give you tips.
You should not do that or you should do that. And I didn't have any of that. I literally couldn't even have my parents here. You know, my parents, they're coming this weekend for the first time ever.
Wow.
To see my restaurant. It's a big day for me. I've been obsessively cleaning my walk-ins because my mom, his love language for me is cleaning. So I know she's going to come in the room and look at the floors and the walls and be like, you need to clean this pit room. And I know I'm going to hear it. So.
But how nice will it be to have them? I'm so happy you get to have them here. Finally, that's so cool. That's so beautiful.
It's the biggest blessing ever. Yeah. I'm so relieved. I just want to see. It's literally, I've been looking and sitting with my dad my entire life, telling him about the day I'm going to have my restaurant. And it's always been like a long time pipe dream. It's been a passion. It's always been a topic of conversation between us. And as I developed into a man, as an adult, it was like, I think I'm really going to do this, Dad. And he was like, you're going to crush it, son. And it was just, he's the one and only person in my mother that I wanted to show this privately to, you know, tell about each wall, about each color. They haven't seen any of it. So every day, it's like I'm getting up early in the morning. It's 4 days till they get here. So it's going to be good. I'm going to make him a huge platter of barbecue. And I'm going to stand up and on the table and tell everyone my parents are here. And I'm going to embarrass them. I'm very Puerto Rican, so I'm very loud. I don't care who hears me. I'm very proud of who they are, and they've always supported who I am. So
do they live in Puerto Rico or do they live in Florida?
No. So they lived, actually, they're the reason why I came to North Carolina when I was 19. My dad got a job in Franklinton, which is like above Wake Forest in Raleigh. Basically, it's a suburb of Raleigh. And I moved in with them. They lived here forever, since 2000.
Okay.
That market dropped out. So my dad found a job back in Texas. So he moved back to do his retirement years. You know, he's going to 3 or 5 years, however much he wants to work left. But I am excited for him to move back in with me. Like, we're that close. It's Puerto Rican culture to have your parents live with you. So if my dad still wants to, because we have 5 kids, he gets along with them well. It's like, hey, Dad, please move back in with us, because I want to take care of him. Uh-huh. You know, his whole life he's poured so much time, attention into 100% of taking care of us and showing us the value of being a good servant leader and a good provider and a loving husband and father. And I hope I become half the person he is. And I just want him to move in and you know, my goal is to buy him a Porsche someday. He's always wanted a Porsche. This is the guy who's driven the same car his whole life, you know, kind of guy.
Yeah.
And never got himself anything important. So I just got to sell more ribs. That's the key.
So how many brothers and sisters did you have?
I have 2 brothers. I have one older. He's like the smart one, like my father. So always, you know, asked to skip grades. He's like a super genius. We call him the evil genius. He's like a director for HR. He lives in Jacksonville, Florida.
Okay.
And my younger brother, who's like the kind-hearted, creative one, he's actually a chef. So he went to culinary school. We all three have a deep, rich passion for food. Just because my mother grew up cooking everything, we never went to like a McDonald's or anything like that. I mean, we did randomly, but really my mother cooked everything and took a lot of pride in why she's cooking it this way, for who she's cooking it for. And that really kind of drove the value of hospitality in our hearts. So my brother's a private chef for a private neighborhood up in the mountains of Asheville. He only works 6 months a year. He's got like the cushiest job ever.
Asheville's gorgeous too.
Yeah. I mean, he lives in the mountains, makes great money, cooks like creative a l'orange dishes. Like he does French cooking and Spanish cooking. And,
sounds terrible.
He worked with me for a short stint, and I thought he was going to be my kitchen manager. And I was like, we don't work well together. So,
It's probably best.
We just have conflicting personalities. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What? And so where your restaurant is called Knightsdale. Is that correct?
Knightsdale. So Knightsdale is east, starting east. So just to let you know, like when you get to, there's like Knightdale, Wendell, Zebulon, then it goes Rocky Mount, Greenville. So you're at the beginning of the road of Eastern Carolina barbecue. This is like, if you would call it anything, the gateway, because it's Raleigh. Then the first thing east is Knightdale, then Wendell, Zebulon. Then you have like Grady, Sam. All of them are like 45 minutes away.
Okay.
Like Skylight Inn is 45 minutes away from here.
Gotcha.
And everything else is in between. So the expectation, why I like it this way, because everything can stay traditional. You know, if I go the other direction, it's too upscale, and that's where all the other chefs go. You know, they all want the downtown, you know, live fire, cooking with truffles. I'm a purist.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't put parsley on anything. I it's meat and sides and dessert.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. We have a couple creative proteins that we like due to the fact we just like eating them more than anything. We're not chefy. We're just fire makers that cook meat. We're no one special. We've just been doing it a lot longer and failing a lot longer than others. But it's beautiful because people have the anticipation around here of eating vinegar-based barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent so much time making Eastern Carolina-style barbecue because I was like, I want to compete with these guys. And then I started just passionately thinking about the other hogs I like to cook, which is lechon. It's a Puerto Rican-style pig. That's what my mother cooked every single, like, Thanksgiving, Easter, Christmas, loved it. It's called a pernil. You know, she would get
She wouldn't do the full lechon.
No. She would get it like a picnic.
Okay, yeah.
Which is like the lower part of the shoulder and create it. When we go to Puerto Rico, like lechon is like, oh, you cook lechon. It's like a big deal. Anyway, I went back to Puerto Rico. I ate some. I got inspired. I came back. I said, hey, I want to do lechon, but Eastern Carolina style on a low profile hood. 18 inches over top of coals with that fat going up, because lechon's whole pig,
mm-hmm.
It's a smaller pig and it's rotisseried on an open, you know, more open air. So there's less concentration of that soulful smoke in the cavity. So that's what I did. And then I cooked enough where it got intention, and I cooked it on Manfire Food. The TV show asked me, hey, this is really interesting what you're doing.
Oh, yeah, that's what I saw it. Okay, I was wondering, I tried to remember
what it was. Roger Mooking, who said, this is one of the best pigs I've ever had on all the shows I've done. And we thought the same. We were like, oh, it's pretty fantastic, but it's different. So I knew there was going to be a curve of educating people. Because if I said Eastern Carolina pork on my menu, I would sell 18 pigs a day like Sam does.
Yeah.
But I say lechon. Well, it says whole hog, lechon in quotations. And they're like, what is that? And it says Puerto Rican style. And I use my great-grandmother's red beans. It has a Colombian pumpkin in it. So it's pumpkin, red beans, culantro, all made from scratch. And so it's white rice with the red beans over top, with the whole hog all around it. And then I take the skin and I crisp it on top. So much flavor, depths,
and so
heritage. And,
good.
It makes you like go like this a little bit, like a little salsa dance when you're eating it. And every Saturday, there's a whole bunch of Puerto Ricans here, and they celebrate it. It's still different. It's still in the phase of being different because we have a lot of traditionalists that expect whole hog to be Eastern Carolina. And you give them a taste, and they're like, it's too citrusy or too much garlic. And I'm like, well, there's no vinegar in it. So, and we don't have vinegar sauce in our entire restaurant. Huh. We serve a tiny little bit of like a vinegary sweet red sauce that I make in-house. And it aggravates people a lot, but I just say, eat the barbecue. And they do, and they said, actually, didn't even need sauce. And I'm like, that's how it should be.
So it's Central Texas style, but you do, and then do the ish, right? I'm trying to, because you do have brisket.
It's hard to say Central Texas style, because if we, unless you taste it side by side, see, visually, you have to make that assumption. It's like baby backs. When I went to 17th Street in Murfreesboro, yeah, and Amy and them cooked baby backs and spares just with no seasoning, I didn't, for some reason in my brain, make the connection that a baby back tastes like a pork chop, a spare rib tastes like bacon. I just never have eaten them by themselves, and it's so true. And I thought, they are so different. And that's what really pushed me on. I never want to cook baby backs ever again. So visually, Central Texas style, I think it came from there. I've just always been served barbecue this way. I think it's the best way to serve it. Where the cut, you interact and gain a relationship with the person crafting and cutting this barbecue for you, and it's put on a tray. We use a black pepper, you know, heavy rub, but it's not as heavy. Like, we're like 40% of what Central Texas is, because they're like heavy,
yeah, yeah,
like 60-70% black pepper. Mm-hmm. In addition, we use like little secret-handed Winks in competition barbecue. We put tiny bits of sweet kind of coated throughout.
Okay.
So you get this balance, a little more balance than you would get off, not Kansas City style. See, everyone wants to know what style it
is. Yeah, that's actually, you shouldn't pigeonhole things. I was just trying to, in my mind, thinking brisket, sausage, ribs, you have that.
Yeah, so there's got to be the trinity.
Trinity.
You got to make house-made sausage. Mm-hmm. I think this is what I wanted. My goal was two things. One, I never wanted to pigeonhole myself as being the best of something. I didn't want to be the whole hog guy, the brisket guy, the sausage guy. I wanted to be the barbecue person. Mm-hmm. I can cook everything that wiggles, swims, or moves. It's the execution of the overall product. Secondly, I didn't want to create a certain type of style, like expectation. And I think, you know, you got to make your sausage in-house. Mm-hmm. Super important. Rare people do it. I spent a lot of time doing it. Got to make brisket, you know, really good too, you know, with salt, pepper, lots of smoke. It's got to be a really good pork shoulder. I think in my competition days, I learned if I chopped it up and put vinegar on it, I would get bottom of the pack. But if I chunked it in these big, unctuous, barky chunks, and I put a nice light red glaze, I got first place grand champion with a big check. I mean, I'm in North Carolina. It taught me that people truly do like a big, more unctuous, less chopped, more barky, sweeter, flavorful pork experience. So there was no way I was going to chop up pork real bad and cover it in vinegar. The ribs, I went a little more Central Texas on the ribs. We did. That I'm honest about. I thought competition ribs were just overly done. You know, with the brown sugar and the butter and the honey and the... After about two or three ribs, I'm like, ugh,
that's
get me out of here. Mm-hmm. But every time we went to Texas, I would eat my weight in ribs. I could eat like a whole rack five times a day. Because it's salt, pepper, a little bit of sweet, and it was just the flavor of the pork. So that's why everything here is compart duroc. I just can't get away from the overall flavor of the pork. All our beef is Creek Stone.
Thought so.
Yeah. We wet age our briskets 43 days. So that's kind of an annoying process, but we really are intimate with making sure we're providing the best possible product on the plate. It's very, very important to us. The trimming, the aerodynamics of how we consider it to collapse and melt on our cookers. Because everyone wants to know how to trim something. I would say, well, it depends on what cooker it's on.
For sure.
On these JRs, they cook completely different. Everyone wants to trim the Central Texas style Aaron Franklin brisket. Well, that's going to work on a Central Texas style Aaron Franklin cooker. That's not going to work on all the cookers that are built, pellet cookers, Webers. It's completely different. So our briskets look a little weird. We stopped butcher papering. So I went back to a purest form of 100% naked. We just run a really clean fire and we melt all that fat down. Huh. So I went from, you know, this is the transition of a cook. Always starting with foil, right? New cooks are always crutching. Mm-hmm. Competition guys, crutching. Then they're like, hey, I found about this guy named Aaron Franklin in Austin. He wraps in butcher paper. It's got to be peach, though. Can't be brown.
Yeah, exactly.
It's being peach.
I was talking to someone last week about that. Yeah, the peach is
so you wrap it, and you get this better product, you know, because not only is the bark have an availability to breathe, but the beef flavor balances, and you wrap it in this blanket of fat, and it rests in this blanket of fat. But when you open it, it still renders out a lot of au jus. Mm-hmm. So sure. The au jus, I thought, was hurting my brisket over time. So I went naked, and I was like, look, I spent my entire career cooking brisket. I've never once cooked it without anything. Just run a really clean fire, wet aged brisket real nice. Let's see how it rolls. And it was awesome. We just kept that train going.
What are your hours right now? And are you selling out each day?
Yeah, so our hours are Tuesday through Saturday, 11 through sellout. So we say like 5. We've been pushing the envelope on the amount of meat we're cooking. We were selling out. I mean, we were way off because we didn't know how people were going to demand this during COVID. So we were selling out sometimes at like 2. And then 3. And then people got angry because we weren't cooking enough meat. So I was like, okay, let's cook as much as we can. So we're pushing it to like 4:30. So that's, I mean, we're cooking a ton of meat, but we're open till about 4:30 each day, selling out each day. I mean, we have 2 or 3 links of sausage left.
Okay.
But I use cross-utilize the sausage in my barbecue rice anyway. And then we use whatever chopped brisket. Chopped brisket's pretty much... I don't stay open for if I have 3 pounds of chopped brisket, but I use that in the beans.
Yeah, so. Yeah, that makes sense. And is there 50% seating right now?
Yes. So we have an enormous dining room.
Yeah, I love it.
Our entire place is 8,500 square feet, so it's pretty big.
Wow, that's good.
We have a pretty massive pit room. We can fit about 90 people inside. We can fit about 40, 50, I know the numbers in between 40 and 50 people outside under the covered fans, the picnic tables. And then we have the green area, which people bring in blankets and have picnics.
Oh, cool.
And there's not a limit there, but it's usually like 20 people. We stay pretty packed. In line, we have about 82 people at a time. So I try to cut it off before the 90-person mark. And that part's been difficult, just getting people to behave in line. The people who don't wear a mask and who want to wear a mask, you know, other people want to police them.
Yeah, it's tough.
It's very, very difficult. But luckily, I'm doing exactly what brings me the most joy. So it's very difficult to get me angry because I'm like, I'm cooking barbecue for a living.
Yes.
Like, this is all I'm doing all day long. That person... You know,
can't ruin
your... 6 feet away, I think you're good. Yeah, so that's pretty much how the day goes.
Chris, I'm so glad we finally talked, and I'm glad we talked now instead of it was like a year ago that we were going to talk, or even further.
Yeah,
this is kind of... I've learned a lot about your soul and who you are as a person, and what you're trying to and what you're trying to bring to Nightdale.
Yeah.
And we said it enough that I think people will know, and I'll put maps and stuff, and I do the blog posts and the, but thank you for taking the time, and I'm so happy. I can't wait to be able to come out there. I used to come out to North Carolina twice a year for furniture market in Green. When my dad was alive, he died 10 years ago. We sold high-end furniture to hotels and stuff, like direct sold.
Oh,
like,
cool. Lexington. Right on. That's
so
cool.
So it was great. And once he died, I realized I love working with him more than selling furniture. It was the relationship with my dad that I love. So, but I used to come out twice
a year.
And that's how I fell in love with Lexington barbecue and that style of barbecue.
It's near the furniture areas, Lexington.
Yeah. And it wasn't something that I was used to having in Los Angeles. It was, I thought, an epiphany.
Yeah, it's completely different. Yeah, I went to LA last year and I ate at all the LA joints. And it's definitely different, but a lot of Central Moose Craft was probably my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
Overall. So they were the longest line, and that whole area they're in. That like underground warehousey
smorgasbord,
yeah, it's insane. But that was the best, I think.
I'll let them know because they're working
exquisite. They executed so well, and I took my cousins. I dragged them who live in Santa Ana probably to 7 or 8 different joints, and that was the one where I was like, oh yeah, this is it. Homemade sausages, the brisket was perfect, the service was great, the sides were great, so. Anyway, we're huge fans of the show. So
thank you. I'm a huge
general manager was like, you better not screw the show up because we like it and we want to make sure. It's really great. You do great work and
thank you.
Man, all your interviews, you get to the heart of what they need to say. So that's awesome.
I love people and this is my like you said, the barbecue is like your vehicle or this is my way to get to know you. So that way like it's a little bit selfish in a way because when I come to see you I'll know more, but also people when they visit they'll know who Chris is and what he stands for. And
well, I mean it's almost like too, like we're sitting in the restaurant or around a fire cooking barbecue. Mm-hmm. Your conversation's so natural to a barbecuer, it's different because a lot of interviews I do, they're like they have no idea. So how long do you grill the brisket for, sir? And I'm like, well, you know, it's a hard question to answer.
It's not about that.
Due to the fact that I don't grill a brisket, but I appreciate the interview. Yeah, exactly. And it means a lot, brother.
Enjoy the time with your parents, too, this weekend. I'm really excited for you.
I am overly excited. So, and Puerto Ricans should not get excited because they can break things in a room. So,
be careful. Take care. Be careful.
Yeah, I sure will. I sure will. Hey, it's great speaking with you, and I'm honored. And if there's ever a time you need a filler or something to talk about, we can talk 10 hours about brisket if you like.
Let's do it. We'll do a part 2 and 3 for sure.
10-4. All right, brother. Thank you again.
Have a great one. Bye.